It's over. It's all over. The drought. The damn wall is busted. It's 62 long years.
It's over. It's over. Cleveland is a city of champions once again. The Cavaliers are NBA champions.
This is the Sports Desk Podcast right here on Sin. Hello all and welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Desk Podcast here on Sin. I'm your host Ben Pascuzzi and alongside me, as always, is Lucy Watkin.
Hello Ben, how are we?
I'm very good, thanks. And yourself?
That's good, yeah, very good, very good. Ben, I know, just getting into a lot of sport as always. Very excited to talk about some of the big things that have been happening. But you know, can't go past Sydney winning on Friday against Adelaide.
Very good win.
Such a good win. Such a tense night.
Top four, do you think? But, Sydney or?
Oh, top four. Results have to go our way, but I reckon we can win it next week, maybe hit the top four. But this week we're having a change of pace. We're not talking finals contenders or ladders. We're hitting the other end of the ladder. So maybe we'll open with this question, just because we're on the subject now. But who do you think will get this year's wooden spoon?
North.
North?
Yep.
After their 50-point loss to Sydney, to St Kilda today?
Yeah, and just, they've got, what, them and my boys, Brisbane, both on 20 points, I believe it is, yeah, 20 points leading into next week. And that game between those two will be played at our home ground at the Gabba. And you, with our form at the moment, we're playing some really good footy. I just don't see us really losing that match. So
yep.
It's going to be, I think, oh, I reckon we've done it the last three times in the last 3 years. We've had a chance to win the coveted wooden spoon, yep. And we've just fallen at the final hurdle. So, yeah, won't be to be for the Lions, I think. But, yeah, North Melbourne are my takers for the spoon.
Everyone sort of thought that Carlton was giving a run to everyone for their money with the wooden spoon.
Yeah.
Lost 8 in a row, I believe. But last night, to win up against the Hawks, that was pretty good. That was
interesting tweet I read from Sam McClure. Twitter was created in, like, 2005.
Yep.
Last time Carlton beat Hawthorn was 2006. So
yep.
Carlton have never been able to tweet yep. that they've been able to beat Hawthorn until last night.
Yeah, but now they have. And then, like, even though I read an article on the AFL website, actually, and all of their sort of predictors, I would say a third of them predicted that Carlton were going to end up with the wooden spoon.
Yeah, I remember reading that same article. Yeah,
I was like, they're not doing that bad. Mm. Surely not. But then, you know, Brisbane are finding form. So I think you might be right. I think we might see bottom three in ascending order. North from the bottom, Brisbane, Gold Coast, Carlton.
Yeah, that'll be the bottom four, I think. And
yeah.
Speaking of Brisbane's form, I remember on Fox Footy, they showed the ladder from the last 10 rounds, I believe it was.
Mm.
We won four games, so we were sitting in about 13th or 14th.
Mm.
Well, maybe even 12th. I don't know. One of those positions is definitely a lot higher than, obviously, 18th. But we've been in some good form, and it's good to see that Brisbane are finally showing some signs and giving their fans, like myself, something to look for into the future, because Carlton have been showing that in glimpses all this season, and Brisbane haven't really shown it for the last 3 years. But the second half of this season, it's starting to show that there is a future there. So
yeah.
Lions fans like myself, there's a lot of hope to come. So
it's
wooden spoon, I don't think, this year. But yeah, North wooden spoon, unfortunately for them, which is incredible considering they finished 8th, it was last season.
Yeah.
And they were preliminary final maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago. So it's such a massive fall from grace, especially considering they got rid of all their veterans last season. What, Ferrito, Brent Harvey,
it's
Petrie.
It's interesting to think what could have been if they kept a few of those guys on. Mm. But unfortunately, you know, they'll pick up some youngsters now, so that could be good for them. Could be good for them.
Maybe this was their master plan.
Maybe. No tanking, please. That's the final word on that, I think, on that question.
Speaking of tanking, I know this is a bit of a, I know I haven't planned this question to you, Lucy, but to remove any potential thought or potential reasoning for tanking, should the AFL adopt, say, like a draft lottery, which is similar that we see in the NBA, instead of having the ascending order from the bottom in the draft order, so 18th, pick one, etc.?
I don't know, because I kind of I like that the team that finishes last gets the picks, and I think it has been a system that has worked so well for so long, especially seeing like teams like Brisbane now who have, you know, finished around the bottom for the last few years but now really hitting their straps because they've gotten those draft picks. Same with Carlton as well. They're just hitting their straps now because they were able to rebuild through getting those draft picks. And we'll probably see the same with North. So maybe that is an incentive to tank, but then I also think that the incentive to win and what winning does for a team just is a bit more important.
Hmm. I'd still like to see a draft lottery of some sort, perhaps. Hmm. Like, I know I'd be disappointed to see Brisbane, say, not get the number two pick if it went to a draft lottery. But potentially have, say, the bottom four, you've got a protected top four pick. And from there, it's just like, if you finish 18th, you've got the highest chance of getting the number one pick.
Mm.
Second last, you've got the second highest chance out of those four. And then maybe the next four, they have the same system as it was for the top four as for the next four.
Mm.
So, and it just goes on until the end of the first round. And from then on in, you can go ascending order.
Yeah.
Something like that, I think, is fair. However, if there's a season where there's a clear bottom place team who are just not performing well at all, say, and a couple of wins for the season, then potentially just give them the priority pick of the number one pick, and then the rest can just follow from the draft lottery. Because I like the idea of a draft lottery, because in the NBA in particular, you see, I think there's teams who do tank and have openly admitted to tanking, despite still this like draft lottery, and that's not even confirmed for a number one pick. So to say that in the AFL there may be teams who are not tanking is a bit weird, considering that we've got that ascending order. So I think a draft lottery is just like a bulletproof shield, like a foolproof.
From something, foolproof like
from something like that. Because remember Melbourne, was it 7 years ago, 6 years ago, they were accused of tanking and they actually got fined like half a million dollars for it, even though they were found not to be not guilty of tanking.
Mm.
So just some, I'm not too sure. Even though it's not an issue that's really broad at the moment, I'd just like to see something like that.
It would definitely happen if something was to happen that really made people question it. That's
the only reason why Brisbane's in the position at the moment is because we haven't been able to retain players.
Yeah.
Simply. Like we lost like five first round picks in 2013, 2014, whenever it was, the infamous go home five, and so that's seen us drop, and of course we're going to be finishing near the bottom of the ladder for 4 or 5 years. So even though there haven't been any talks of us tanking, if there are talks of tanking, there's people that need to do research, for example. Yeah. Carlton, obviously, Carlton have been hampered ever since 2002, the salary cap breach. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
They were breached for the salary cap. They lost all those picks.
Yeah.
So they've just been on a hard turmoil ever since then. And North, obviously, because of their four veterans who they lost last season, headlined by Boomer Harvey, games leading record holder. So, there's fair reason for all those three teams, and Gold Coast are just, they're a shambles.
Yeah.
What are we going to do with them?
The wheels are falling off.
Will Gold Coast move?
I don't know. Like, I can't really answer it. Like,
in the next 5 years, do you see Gold Coast moving? I know I put you on the spot here.
No.
Ooh.
Because it's a bad look for the AFL, and they wouldn't want that.
If the opportunity arose within the next 5 years, do you see Gold Coast potentially leaving to Tasmania?
Unless only something like...
If the opportunity arose.
If the opportunity arose.
Massive hypothetical.
I don't think so.
You still reckon?
Not yet. I don't think so.
Okay. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. You probably do still see Gold Coast, because the AFL haven't really had a history of clubs joining and then leaving. That's more so like your A-League, your NRL, NBL... Mm. Those lower class Australian, not lower class, but like compared to the AFL, they're not like the most popular, the biggest leagues in the country. AFL undoubtedly is the biggest league in the country, most popular league in the country, and hasn't been known for that. So yeah, Gold Coast, you'd probably say they do, but if the opportunity arose for a team in Tasmania to come and play, and the AFL didn't want to expand to 20 teams, I do see actually Gold Coast or potentially North. Maybe moving to Tasmania, because Tasmania need a team. There's no doubting about it.
Yeah, it'll happen eventually, but I think we've got a ways to go before that happens. Mm. Yeah.
All right. We'll move on. We'll get back on track with the show. MRP confusion. Jack Redpath, he was banned for 2 weeks initially by the MRP for quote-unquote striking Phil Davis, as with an open palm, mind you. And then he appealed that to the tribunal and was subsequently suspended for 3 weeks. So he got an extra week on top of that. What do the MRP need to do to clear any of this confusion?
Well, I think they need clearer guidelines, I think. Like, I know they've probably broken it down very, very simply, like, already. But to me, they're cracking down, like, the crackdown has been, like, such a sort of buzzword, I think, this year with the MRP and the AFL. And I think, you know, that was a good thing when it was stamping out all the fighting that was happening, like, at the start of the season. And also, you know, protecting players' heads. Like, that's really, really important. But I think now, because of this, a massive grey area has been created where it's like, if something happens, they feel like they have to do something. So I think they need to be a bit more clear-cut in what it is that is and isn't an infringement.
I think the guidelines they've got at the moment is pretty poor because under the current guidelines, Jack Redpath did deserve 2 weeks. So it was high impact, high contact, forceful, intentional.
Yeah.
So that warrants a 2-week suspension. But I feel they just scrap the guidelines completely and just take each case that comes to the MRP as a single trial basis.
Mm.
Now, you can still have guidelines here and such, but for example, for the Jack Redpath one, if you see cases where there's like his was, and you see that's clearly not the same as, say, I don't know, say another strike that occurred during the season,
well,
and it's not warranting 2 weeks, change it. Mm. I mean, take it by that case's example. Don't compare it to the guideline and say, oh, okay, because it was high impact, because it was intentional, we're going to give him the 2 weeks, and if he appeals it, it'll go up to the 3. Just don't purely look at it at the guidelines, I think, anyway.
Yeah, I know what you mean, and I think Bob Murphy, although he is a teammate of Redpath's, I still think he summed it up pretty well in that he was just like, there is a chasm between what Redpath did and coming in and punching someone in the head, which a rule like that is what those guidelines are made for. So I think there is confusion, and that, like, as you said, like, I'm probably sure the AFL have thought about, like, you know, case by case kind of thing.
I think they just got to scrap the MRP at the moment. Just scrap it. Start fresh.
Jimmy Bartow has just stepped down from the MRP. So, you know, there could be some big changes ahead, but definitely
you can have your guidelines
needs to be
all
clearer.
You want.
Yeah, it needs to be clearer.
Yeah, you can have your guidelines all you want, but if there's a case like that, which is clearly different and it's common sense that it's different, then you need to apply a different set of guidelines to it and a bit more common sense, because it's just dumbfounding.
It looked like a shove, sort of like...
Say someone from overseas, say like in the NFL or a rugby union fan, rugby league fan, watches that and say, oh, how many weeks... Did he get suspended for that, first of all? They'll ask that.
Yeah.
And then when we say 3 weeks, geez, they'll be laughing. And that's the reason why... One of the reasons
especially
why
with
the AFL,
everything else that happens in the game.
Yeah.
Like...
It's one of the reasons why the AFL potentially can't grow globally. Mm. It could be a harming factor. So, it's something they definitely have to look at.
And speaking of confusion, we've got MRP confusion. Now we have confusion on a whole nother level, because I feel like, and it was raised in The Age today, that is Sunday the 20th of August, that AFLW, when the hell do you hold this season?
Mm. Because, I don't know.
You know, I feel for the AFL here, because I understand what they're trying to do, in that they're trying to give the competition clear air, as Gil McLachlan said, so they want it to just be a standalone kind of thing, which is smart. But then you still got cricket on, the W League is still on, you know, the JLT Community Series is starting, and they want to start the competition on Australia Day weekend to accommodate for this extra week of finals they want. But it's just too much.
Yeah.
So when do you hold it?
I like the positioning of where it was originally, because when it started around early February.
Yeah, February 3 was the first game.
Yeah. I like that, because JLT, did come what, around the to the sec- towards the second half of that season.
Yeah.
And of course you've got the A-League season finishing in March. You got the Big Bash finishing late January, maybe even early Feb this year, because
the longer fixtures. Season,
yeah, it's a longer season now. Obviously, the women's Big Bash. So I kind of like that time frame, but eventually I'd still like to see it, because they still play with their regular clubs during the season. I'd like to see it go coincide with the AFL season eventually. That's obviously the ultimate goal, but at the moment it worked well where it was, so why change it? If you're gonna if you're not going to change the number of teams, you may as well not change when the season's going to start. Just leave it, see how it goes for the next 2 years, and maybe next year, year after this year, 3 years, trial it, see how it goes, grow the league, then grow the teams, and then bring it along the AFL season. Because that'll be great, I think.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. It's like one of those things at the moment where it's like, if not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
But also, it's so tough because, you know, you have girls now like Emma Carney, you know, Kirstie Lamb and Jess Duffin, nay Cameron, who all were in the WNCL Bushrangers team, I believe. They're not in the squad this year because they can't commit to the fixture. So they'll only play Big Bash. So, you know, we're getting more and more of this type thing. A couple of the girls in the W League only started from game two of the season. So you get more and more of this overlap, and it seems like the more and more women's sport professionalises, the more and more we're going to see, you know, players miss out and it be, like, just tough choices being made, which arguably is a good thing because you want them to sort of be professional and stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, my dad today was talking to me about it, and he sort of put it up that maybe have it in March and April before the state leagues start, and in that sort of part before the AFL season starts.
Yeah. That'd be a quick season though, wouldn't it?
Well, there's only the 8 teams at the moment.
Yeah.
But when you go to 10 or 12, that's when that gets tricky. But maybe that is when they do that, when you get to 10 and 12. You start it in mid-Feb and run it till March.
I still like it where it is.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, you still want to see them play a couple more games than just, say, 4 or 5. You still want to play a fair bit. So I reckon just leave it. See how we go. See how the popularity goes with it. And, yeah, just why change it? It was good last season.
It was amazing.
Season passed. So I reckon just keep it.
So it's definitely... It's so tough. But it's definitely something we'll have to revisit definite when goal, it though. Happens.
Definite goal is to run it coincide with the AFL season so they can actually play it during the season and make it professional rather than just go to their local clubs during their season.
Yeah.
All right, that's it for AFL this week. We'll move on to some cricket now. And with the recently resolved pay dispute coming to a conclusion a couple of weeks ago, will it have any effect on the quality of Australia's cricket in the upcoming tour against Bangladesh?
I think this is a really interesting question because I feel like as much as people say that it's over, it's done, it's in the past, it won't hurt anyone or it won't hurt Australia's chances. That was hectic, that dispute. Like, it went on for ages. There was so much negotiating, so much sort of like, you know, backdoor like kind of disagreements and negotiations and all this kind of thing. Players were like fully on strike, like they were on holidays, like tours didn't happen. So I very well think that, you know, that first test we could potentially see a few rusty players out there.
Did players train at all?
I don't think so. Like, I saw they probably would have gone out and had a hit and stuff. But I think before this first sort of training camp that they've had up in Darwin, not a lot of cricket was done.
All right. In that case, if that is the case, they've had limited, their training has been greatly affected by this pay dispute. I do say that actually has an effect because no matter, like what you said, I totally agree. No matter what people say that, oh, okay, it's over now, they can completely focus on the cricket, it's hindered their preparation massively. Yeah. Bangladesh have had their 100% focus on this test series ever since whenever their last series was. So they probably had a good 2-3 months to look at this. Okay, so we're going to be coming against the Australians. Let's put our 100% focus on that. The Australians, on the other hand, have had to focus on, okay, I'm striking here, I'm not going to play cricket because of this pay dispute. And now a month and a half leading into this tour, now that their mind,
their mindset like has to change, like change back into
another way. I lost my words. I'm getting tired. Okay, yeah, their mindset. Their mindset's now switched to cricket. So, yeah, it's definitely going to have effect because, particularly in cricket, cricket's just such a mental sport. Mm. I mean,
especially Test cricket as well.
Yeah, because you can, as good as you can be, you can play all the shots. It's just about, it's all in decision making and whether or not you're going to play the ball or you just feel like you're in a good shape to make runs.
Yeah.
So it's all mental cricket, particularly, like you said, Test cricket.
And there'd be pressure on them too. There'd be pressure on them too. You know, this is their first outing since that Resolve pay dispute.
Yeah.
You know, the Australian public are cricket and cricket fans would want to see these boys go out and be successful because they'd be like, well, what the hell was all that about if you're not going to go out there and play some good cricket? Like, was it really worth all the effort?
Yeah.
So there'll be a lot of pressure. And as you said, their focus hasn't been on playing cricket. It's been about behind the scenes, which is never a good thing. But, you know, I think coming up against Bangladesh is probably the best test for Australia at the moment. You know, we've slipped a bit in the ratings, the world rankings. And Bangladesh are hitting some form. They're not the sort of easy beats they once were. So I think, you know, it's a good time for Australia.
Yep, very good time, very good test. All right, moving on from cricket, we'll shift our focus to tennis. And finally, Nick Kyrgios, good news here.
We had a battle to get this question into the show because I was like, I'm not talking about Nick Kyrgios again, but you, forever the Kyrgios
fan. That's
the
thing, though. As soon as he does something good, like it's always the only reason that we'll talk about him is because it's negative. But whenever something good happens with him, you're just like, oh, I'm sick of him. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
Let's give him some limelight.
All right.
I reckon.
All right.
So, Kyrgios, he's into the final of the Cincinnati Masters. And the Cincinnati Masters, they are a Masters 1000 tournament. And the way tennis works is, so it goes Grand Slam, it goes Masters tournaments, and then, say, like an ATP 500 tour. So, the Masters are the second fiddle to the Grand Slam, second tier. So, Nick Kyrgios, if he is to win the tournament tomorrow when he plays at 6 a.m. Australian time against Grigor Dimitrov, he'll be the first Australian since Leighton Hewitt, I believe it was around 2003, 2004, when he won Indian Wells, to win a Masters 1000 tournament. The first Australian since Leighton Hewitt.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal, yeah.
Now the question I've got is, has Kyrgios finally, I know it's very early, because 2 weeks ago we were talking about what does he need to do.
He needs to take
a week off. He needs to take a month off or take the rest of the year off. Has he finally turned his career around?
Look, as you said, it's early. It's so early to call this. Like, it's too early. Like, I don't want to go, but, you know, in the quarterfinal he did beat the number one seed, which is a big scalp.
And Nadal is going to become the world number one very soon.
Exactly. But, you know, I see his attitude when he's playing and he's still... And do not say, that's what Roger Federer used to do, blah, 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 blah. He's still throwing the racket. He's still, you know, got the attitude. And he was mouthing off at the umpire the other night.
Oh, the umpires give him nothing. The umpires are just completely biased against him now because they know that he's going to have a go. He'll have a go at them if he sees, like, a couple of bad line calls here and there. And, like, rightly so, the umpires should have a little bit of bias, but the umpires give him nothing.
Yeah,
like,
but you can't be mouthing off. You have to be better than that. So, look, I want him to play a great US Open, and then I'll give him some time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably hasn't really turned it around. Because even in his interview post-Nadal, I believe it was, he admitted to saying that whenever he plays against, say, a lowly player on centre court with, I don't know, half a dozen people in the stands, he lacks the motivation to really play. But whenever he plays against a big top dog on a big court with a lot of fans watching, that's when he seems to rise to the occasion. And he openly admits to saying that he lacks the motivation when he does play against those lowly players. So
what you have to do? You have to beat the lowly players. So he can't get too on his high horse about it.
He's still got a long way to go. But I am liking this so far from Kyrgios. If he makes the quarters from the US, I'm going to be extremely pleased.
Mm.
But, yeah, I hope he wins tomorrow. I don't know. Grigor Dimitrov is a very good opponent. So, Yeah, it'll be interesting, but yeah, it's probably way too early to say that if he's turned his career around.
But look, let's hope this is like, maybe won't turn it around here, but maybe this will be a turning point.
I still love you, Nick.
And that's probably enough.
Yeah, I still love him. All right, sticking with tennis, in the US Open, Maria Sharapova was awarded a wild card. Should she have been awarded a wild card into the US Open?
Now, we've spoken a lot about this issue on the sports desk on a Wednesday when we talk sports politics, or as we call it, spolitics. And we were quite shocked, I think, when Roland Garros didn't award her a wild card into the tournament. Mm-hmm. So it seems incredibly strange that the US Open has gone, have sort of changed tune of the tennis world and, you know, have awarded her this wild card. And then just part of me just thinks it just isn't right. Mm. Despite the marketability or the attractiveness of a player to a tournament, mm-hmm. you can't offer them these chances up on a silver platter when they've been banned for drug use. That's my thoughts on that.
Well, it's the US. They're like always said to be going against the trend of the world, setting the trend. Mm. I see where they're coming from, but I totally agree with you still. Like, you still can't accept this. I mean, to say for what kind of standard does this set for the rest of the playing contingent in tennis?
Yeah,
to
exactly.
Say, like, you can take drugs, openly admit to cheating, serve a ban, and then within 2 or 3 years be welcome open arms back into the sport. I know, as sinister as it sounds to say to not let them in, even like as I'm saying it right now.
But if you've
got
to come back, it's like, do it, start from scratch. Like, you have to play those tournaments.
Yeah, exactly.
And do it again. And if you're a good enough, you know, a good enough player, you should be able to do that, you know?
Yeah.
That's how I feel.
I'm sick of talking about drugs in sport and all this, just like you are sick of talking about Nick Kyrgios.
Yeah, I know. It's one of those ones,
basketball,
isn't it?
Basketball. We'll move on to some basketball now. The Boomers are in the Asian Cup final. Now, by the way of me not even knowing the correct term of the tournament, is there any interest?
No. And I think this is because, as you mentioned to me off air, is that they don't have any star power in this competition. There's no, in this cup or championship, there's no NBA players playing, and, you know, arguably Australia is the star power, I would assume.
Yeah, well, we're in the final.
But blooding some young guns, getting some game time on the court, you know, just prime us for our next meeting with the champions. So, you know, it's not all bad even if you're not getting attention.
There's no point. I don't see the point in this tournament at all, like whatsoever. Call it like, why don't they just have, I don't know, under 23s tournament perhaps? Don't have like a senior tournament.
I get you, yeah.
Like, I know they're doing this because some of the Asian teams aren't good enough to, say, play in the like the basketball tournaments or whatever. But if you're a country that's as good as Australia, who are proven, who were not robbed, but should have won a bronze medal in the Rio Olympics in 2016.
Yeah.
Feels like ages ago.
God,
it was just last year.
Yeah, just last year.
Just don't play them. I mean, we don't have any interest. No one here has any particular interest in these lowly basketball tournaments. So, yeah, don't really see the point in it. But what can you do?
With the
FIBA,
the NBL coming back and stuff like that, you know, it could be good for those players and stuff. So,
because the team's just solely represented by NBL players, which is good for the NBL, but there's no interest, no media attention towards it.
Towards it, yeah. No, I get you.
Because Fox Sports, they signed an agreement earlier this month, well, at the start of the tournament, to broadcast every game and all Boomers games leading into like 2023. Don't quote me on that, but yeah, something like that. They should have broadcasted it on free to air.
Yeah, get back on like...
Because if you want to create attention for a tournament that's clearly not going to, if you're going to do it on pay TV, broadcast it on free-to-air TV.
Mm.
There's little to no basketball on free-to-air TV, so just
do
something like that.
Drum up some interest, yeah. No, I get you. But yeah, I think the answer to that question is just like, there's no interest.
Yeah, there's no point.
No.
Soccer. You want to talk about Sam Kerr?
Oh, I love Sam Kerr. Like, this is so exciting.
Just as much as I love Nick Kyrgios?
Just as much as you love Nick Kyrgios.
Okay.
But I'm so excited about this. Like, you know, at least Sam Kerr has found some form, you know? Not the same can be said about Nick Kyrgios. But anyway.
He has found some form. What are you talking about?
Well, he's in one final. So we can get to that. We can get
Did
to
Sam
it.
Kerr make any finals?
Yeah, she just won a tournament of nations with Australia.
Did she do it by herself?
Pretty much, because she scored 3 goals in one half against Japan.
I thought there was no I in team.
Set up every single goal in our game against Brazil. Well, she was instrumental in it. I thought, all right, Nick, come on.
Nick's got to do it all by himself.
All right, whatever. Anyway, Sam Kerr has been named, rightly so, in the top 10 for the FIFA Women's Player of the Year. Do you think she can win this?
I don't see why not. The form, like you said, that she's been in, kicking bags of goals, 3-4. She dominated the Tournament of Nations, the newly Tournament of Nations that America created and was supposed to win, but they didn't. So, I don't see why not.
That's what I think too. I don't see why not either, especially after today, her team in the National Women's Soccer League in America, Sky Blue FC, were down 3-0 against Seattle. So Sam Kerr just thought, why not? I'm going to kick 4 goals, including the match sealer, to get Sky Blue over the line 5-4 in this game. And she's become the first woman in that competition to kick 4 goals in a game and is now leading the leading goal kicker of that tournament. So, you know, it's a pretty stiff competition. Carly Lloyd's been nominated for the third time from the US as well. A couple of girls in the Dutch team that just won the Euro as well. So, stiff competition, but with the form that she's in at the moment, as you said, can't see why not.
Mm-hmm. All right, and speaking of kicking, something that Conor McGregor will not be allowed to do in his boxing fight against Floyd Mayweather. Does he, in the week, there was news that they've changed the weight, you know, the gloves that the McGregor and Mayweather can use from 10-ounce gloves to 8-ounce gloves. It's a very minor change, like, 50 grams or something?
Yeah, it was like 60 grams. When
60
we looked
grams,
this up,
something like that. Does McGregor have a better chance now that they are using 8-ounce gloves in the fight?
Well,
and this fight is next Sunday. It's going to be massive.
It's going to be huge. And McGregor's sort of come out with this decision, and classic Conor McGregor has sort of just said, well, now that they've changed the glove sizes, I give Mayweather 2 rounds. 2 rounds, that's what I give him.
I love Conor
McGregor. So do I. I'm so glad that I'm here with someone else who loves him. Well, we found a point of,
yes, here we go.
Of similarity. No, but I love Conor McGregor. And, you know, I think, as you said, small change. The gloves are still a lot heavier than the ones that he uses
double
the weight of the ones he uses for UFC. But with the left hook that he does have, that famous hook that he has, you know, this it could be dangerous for Mayweather, but also Conor McGregor is not a boxer.
Yeah.
So it relies on a lot else.
Yeah.
So maybe a slight edge, but I think there's just too many variables for it to be the edge.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree. I mean, Mayweather is a pure boxer, and he's arguably the greatest pure boxer of all time. He's got a record of 49-0, gunning for that 50 straight record.
Imagine if he won. Like, I know, I really want McGregor to win because I think it would be just amazing.
That's actually we can actually ask a question. We'll ask it later on. But if he wins 50-0, like, does it really like mean as much as it would have if he like fought against a pure fighter? We'll ask that later on the show.
Yeah.
But
We can ask that in 2 weeks' time when we come back.
Does it mean as much?
Does it mean as much?
I'm going to say no, it won't.
If he wins on Sunday, and then we can flip the question again and just be like, does this blight his legacy?
Well, do you think if he wins?
We're going to hold on to this question.
Well, I'm going to be early on. I'm going to say no. It does. Like, it'll have an effect, as in terms of, like, it won't mean as much. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, you don't want to have a go at it. So
no, I'm going to hold on to it because I'm going to keep the people who listen in suspense.
Okay.
For our next episode.
Anyway. That's all right. So McGregor having a chance, having more of a chance. Obviously it does. I mean, 2 ounces, even though it's only 60 grams, it does give him a greater chance because they're not using the pillow gloves, as it's been dubbed, the 10-ounce gloves. It's boxing though, and even though McGregor is more of a boxer in his MMA fights,
he's all
his wins have come from in the boxing stance and knocking people out predominantly. Mayweather's just a pure boxer. And it's going to be hard to see McGregor having a chance. Like, I'm an optimist. I kind of see McGregor maybe potentially, if he's going to win, he'll knock him out in two rounds, four rounds.
Yeah.
If not, it'll be like a 12-round fight, potentially. Yeah. But it's just so hard because you just see Mayweather. He's a fighter, and like, even though he hasn't knocked anyone out major in his career, Mayweather, you just, because he's a fighter, you potentially see him doing that to McGregor. But Mayweather's 40? Is it 41?
He's older, yeah.
Yeah, he's very old, been out of training for 2 years. McGregor's in training, he's young, he's 29.
Yeah.
Late 20s anyways. And in the, arguably the prime of his career.
Yeah.
29, 30, that's around the prime of his career in fighting, in any sport really. So this could, McGregor could give Floyd a run for his money here. I'm a bit of an optimist. I do see McGregor taking it up to Mayweather purely because of that factor that Mayweather's old, McGregor is young, up and coming, has been in training. He's going to be a lot fitter than Floyd. But again, it's boxing. Floyd's got the experience. Mayweather's only fought at amateur level. And yeah. Do you want to go tips?
Tips. I'm going to sensationally say McGregor.
Oh, darn it.
I'm going to say McGregor in a knockout. Like, I think it's going to happen.
Yeah,
like,
I'm McGregor.
I think it's going to happen. There's something about it that just suggests that it could happen.
I'm just thinking, I'm just trying to think. What if Floyd and Connor, this is a hypothetical, answer yes or no to this. Do you reckon they've agreed pre-fight to allow McGregor to knock him out so they can have a dual fight? So that way there's going to be even more interest for the second fight.
Nah. McGregor wouldn't agree to something like that.
Do you reckon that's a possibility?
Nah.
Nah?
Nah.
I reckon it may be. I don't know.
Nah.
Because Floyd Mayweather is all about money.
Yeah.
So it could happen. I don't know. But yeah, I'm kind of like you. I don't know. I just believe in this fairy tale. I reckon McGregor can
do it. That's what I'm about. Like, I'm about
Hemi
that
rounds,
farewell
though,
too.
I reckon he's still, it's going to be like his first prediction, four rounds.
I still think about four rounds, yeah.
Imagine if he knocks him out with the first punch. That'd be hilarious.
Oh, God, that would be funny. But no, you say stay tuned for our wrap-up of that fight in 2 weeks' time.
If it goes to 12 rounds, though, do you consider that a McGregor win, nevertheless? Even though it'd probably be Floyd who wins it in 12 rounds.
If they have to go full, like the full 12 rounds, it'd be Mayweather. Just because he would be a smarter boxer.
As in, I know Mayweather will win, but like, I don't know how to put this in words, but just Mayweather said, he had an interview with Stephen A. Smith, if the fight goes to 12 rounds, do you see this as a... It wasn't like a loss to yourself. I think it was. I get you.
Like, you've let your standards drop by letting McGregor even get that
exactly.
far.
Yeah. I'm saying it will be.
I don't.
Clearly.
But I don't know. I think McGregor wouldn't do it if he didn't think he could give him a run for his money. Floyd Mayweather wouldn't do it if he didn't think he would be getting a run for his money.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point in getting to a boxing ring and just being able to just win?
Floyd just reckons it's easier just to get his 50-0.
Yeah,
I hope
exactly.
McGregor shuts him up.
Yeah.
Oh, let's hope so. In 2 weeks' time, we'll be able to tell you whether or not that one, McGregor or Mayweather, won that fight.
Yeah.
And in 2 weeks' time, we'll be able to tell you who's playing in the AFL finals.
Yes, we will, which will be an exciting time. It'll be huge. It'll be delicious.
Delicious. All right, that's all from us here at the Sports Says Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening to this week's show. We will be back, as we said, in 2 weeks' time. So from all of us here, hope you enjoy listening to us where we talked nothing but sport, the games which unite the people of the world. Sick.